on Tuesday, we deferred the presentation on Project Kuyasa to be done today so we can have ample time to engage with the document. But we will also take the opportunity after we've dispensed of that to also have our BRRR report adopted, which we will then have to ask the department and the officials to excuse us when we do that. I would therefore want to give a special welcome to the officials of the department, as well as the guests that have been able to join us today on these proceedings of the Portfolio Committee on Agricultural Land Reform and Rural Development. I do hope that we are staying safe and protected and are spending time to reflect on the many South Africans we've lost thus far. His Excellency President Cyril Matamela Ramaphosa has asked of us as South Africans to pay tribute and commemorate those that have fallen during this cause by wearing a black armband on your arm. So we will request and remind honorable members as representatives of our communities and constituencies to lead by example and ensure that we commemorate those fallen heroines and heroes of our country. Honorable members, let me therefore invite the department to lead us in the presentation on Project Kuyasa. I will then take this opportunity to hand over to the acting DG, Tate Ramasodi, or is it gonna be going straight to the commissioner, Mamu Koboto? Who's leading, Mamu Koboto? Please unmute your microphone. Okay, there we are. We can hear you.
To the Honorable Chair, Honorable members, thank you very much for the opportunity to come and present to you.
Mamu Koboto?
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you, but what is also coming much louder than you is the taxis in the vicinity. Can you ask them to close the windows, perhaps, in your office?
Unfortunately, Chair, I'm in the middle of town, but I won't be doing the presentation. Ms. Cindy Panyane will do it.
Okay.
I'll just quickly say thank you
to
for the
introduction remarks.
Yes, Chair.
All right, please proceed.
I think this is the joy of working at the city center of Pretoria. You have to contend with the taxis, and it's a whole day affair. Thank you very much, Chair. I think the interesting thing around the presentation that we're going to give is the fact that even today, it's going to be myself as the Chief Land Claims Commissioner with Cindy Panyane, who's the Deputy Land Claims Commissioner, and a few of our commission support. I think that the fact that it's just the two of us also is telling of the challenge that we have around where the commission itself is located. But Chair, so that I don't waste any of your time, I will hand over to Ms. Panyane to give the presentation, and both of us will take the questions thereafter. Thank you very much, Chair.
Ms. Panyane Ninjani? Nipilile, Ms. Panyane? You may proceed as soon as you are ready.
Okay. Okay. Apologies for that. Ms. Benyan is just having difficulty with her mic, but in the meantime, I can perhaps start if you will allow me.
No, please proceed, Commissioner. She'll join us as soon as she's audible and she's able.
Thank you very much, Chair. As the committee members are aware, I think beginning of the year, we did come to the portfolio committee to give a presentation on Project Kuyasa. And we did indicate that the project is it really emanated from Hagisa, then on agriculture, where then there was a mandate that said that we needed to fast track the settlement of claims. We then said we wanted to understand what fast tracking would mean for us as commission. And as a result, we did a mini Pakistan, which then came up with a whole lot of evidence on what we needed to do. We did also take into account the various policy reviews that were done on the commission by DPME, by the Human Rights Commission, and others. And so then we decided to then do Project Kuyasa, where we are seeking then to define what we would have to do for us to be able to deal with that question that says fast track the settlement of the outstanding old order claims. And also bearing in mind that there is the Lamusa judgment that we presented to you on Tuesday, where the Constitutional Court has requested that on a 6-monthly basis we report to them on how far we are in terms of the progress towards dealing with the old order claims that are still outstanding. And so, Chair, next slide, draft please. So, Chair, what we did then as part of Project Kuyasa is for us to look at a business architectural model, and we identified 9 projects.
Hello, can you hear me?
Are you connected now, Cindy?
Yeah, CLCC, good morning. Sorry, but my camera still doesn't want to connect. Apologies.
Chair, can I hand over to Ms. Benyan?
Yes, you may proceed.
Thank you, Chair.
Good morning, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members. Apology for that. I don't know what happened this morning with the connection. I couldn't access my sound and my camera, and for now, I can't access the camera, but apology for that. For the sake of time, I'd like to thank you for the opportunity and then go over to the presentation, Chairperson. I'd like to start on slide 3 of the presentation for today by just giving a background on the project itself. You know, somewhere in last year, or was it early this year, we briefed you on the Project Kuyasa initiative and where it emanated from. We also highlighted the 5 outcomes that we are dealing with. Outcome 1 deals with the backlog reduction, our backlog reduction strategy and our process improvement. Outcome 2 deals with the change management and people management. Outcome 3 is the organizational form, both the interim I'll present today and the long term as we go move towards autonomous and the processes, and then the review of our finance and settlement model. And outcome 5 was just talking to the project management. Then Chairperson, from slide number 5, I've just given some terminology until slide number 8, which I won't repeat again, just some explanation on some of the terminology that we use in the commission. But if there, I can then go to slide number 10 just to recap on the performance of the commission, just to also state before the 31 December 1998 cutoff date, we received about 79,000 land claims. We had a paper-based system. In those days, you could lodge a claim form in a municipal office, at a police station, at an NGO, and so forth. And it was one of the contributing factors that made it difficult to amalgamate our statistics as a commission. On slide 11, I've just spoken to performance, how much we've done as a commission up till 31 March 2020. And I've referred to the number of hectares we settled, beneficiaries, female-headed households, and so forth. Slide number 12, I've also just referred to the expenditure, land cost, financial compensation on grants, and about the total awards that the commission has spent. And if we then refer to slide number 14, Chairperson, I will then start talking to outcome number one. In outcome number one, as a commission, we basically had a whole host of challenges when we were under Pakisa identified. And during Operation Pakisa, they initiated and indicated to us that our statistics needs to be verified and that we need to have some sort of indication what the statistics represents. And then Chairperson, also during this exercise, they indicated to us that we need to have it underwritten by an independent party. I am glad to say phase one, Chairperson, has been finalized. We've consolidated our data based on the outstanding land claims, and we are also now able to report to the court when it comes to the Lamosa judgment. You will see that the date of the information I'm going to provide now is September 2020. When I previously met with you to present on Kuyasa, I indicated that we are hoping to finalize the first phase by February, March this year. But then we had the hard lockdown, so the cleanup of the data, we could not finalize until officials had access to the offices because we needed access to the physical files, Chairperson. That we could only finalize by September 2020. Since that is finished, we could then, by the end of October this year, appoint the independent service provider that will do the second step verification, and that process is currently underway. So let me then talk to all the slides, Chairperson. I'll give a national summary, and I will also give a provincial breakdown. In the national summary, we are basically referring to the national number. If I can just stay still on slide number 14. We are basically referring to the national number of outstanding claims, Chairperson. We are basically saying there's 9,400 claims outstanding. We are also saying of this, since Kuyasa started, we finalized and settled about 1,128. We've got total outstanding of 8,200. Claims that we've not started on is 6,903. And then we've got phased claims. Then, Chairperson, when it comes to the breakdown, when it comes to provincially, you will see the highest number of claims are in KZN, Limpopo, and Mpumalanga, Chairperson. We have got about 2,600 claims in KZN, 1,500 in Limpopo. In Mpumalanga, it's 2010. And then Eastern Cape has got 740. The province of Free State have got 8 claims. Of those 8 claims, all of them are court referrals. Northern Cape have got 83 claims, Northwest 216, and Western Cape 503. I just think I want to explain the phenomenon of Northern Cape and Northwest. Those numbers might look very low, Chairperson, but in Northern Cape, you can even find a claim where you've got 120,000 hectares to be transferred related to that claim. In Northwest, you can even find one claim form that has got 2,000 properties linked to it. So the verification will assist us with the cleanup of our statistics and our data. Just apologies for the typo up there. It still refers to January 2020. Then if we move to the next slide, Chairperson, if we move on to slide number 15, we've interrogated our business processes. Now, Chairperson, we've got a business process steps that we have to finalize towards the conclusion of a claim form of the claims. You will see, let's start at screening and categorization. About 2% of the claims are at screening and categorization. And in preliminary investigation, about 8% of the claims are there. Then surrounded in red is the research stages of Gazette and further research. 15% of our claims are delayed at gazetting and 28% of the claims delayed at further research. Another one ring-fenced in red is valuation. It's 14% and 15% in settlement. So why the focus on the red ones, ring-fenced, Chairperson? That is basically where our major delays are in the business processes, why claims are not moving forward, where we need to focus on to unblock those bottlenecks. Now, if you look at the gazetting, it's a very administrative process. The delay is created because you don't need to have the contact details and deliver a notice to a landowner. You need to have a stakeholder consultation to and meetings. The further research, Chairperson, is with the discovery that a claim might have been researched, but not necessarily all portions of land have been researched. When it comes to the valuation of the 14%, we've signed a service level agreement with the Office of the VG that we hope will assist in addressing the challenges regarding valuations. And then when you look at settlements, Chairperson, delay that we've got with settlements is the issue of the various sectors. We, as a commission, settle claims in all sectors. Our settlement models are outdated, and we don't necessarily have that strong capacity for negotiations. Just to go through the other step, we only have 2% in court. And then, Chairperson, that is basically the summary on our business processes. We've also identified how many claims we've got in the rural areas and how many claims in the urban areas. And then there's about 1% that we need to still define. So 75% in our claims are in the rural areas. If we just move on, Chairperson, to the next slide. We've also identified, Chairperson, which sectors the claims are in, so we know what we need to focus on. So we've identified 6 sectors that we need to focus on, which is agriculture, urban, forestry, mining, conservation, and tourism. You will see at the bottom there's 2 big yellow lines. It says mixed. Now that mixed means basically that the claims are in a number of sectors. So you will have one claim that maybe affects sugarcane, agriculture, and forestry. Then we've got records on that one, and then we've got the TBD to be determined. We've got about 25%, which is due to those research that need to be identified, which will only be defined once that research has been finalized. Chairperson, if we move to the next slide, I want to just briefly explain the provincial breakdowns. We now know when it comes to the provincial breakdowns, where the claims are, in which districts it is, where the delay in the business process is, and the urban versus rural break. Let me start with the Eastern Cape. We now know that the Eastern Cape have got about 836 total claims. We now know that claims that are pure outstanding, it's about 696, and in phase, it's about 44. When you go to the next blockage, Chairperson, you will basically also see the major blockage when it comes to the business processes in the Eastern Cape is further research, and another major blocking in the Eastern Cape is 30% is valuation. If we then go down when it comes to districts, Chairperson, you can see where the district breakdown is. The most outstanding claims in the Eastern Cape is in the SARA district, SARA Bartman district, followed by Amatole. And then we also know about 64% of these claims are rural claims. If we go to the next province is Free State. I've referred to it, there's 8 claims total outstanding in the Free State. We have got 100% of the claims when it comes to the next blocky at the milestones in court. At the bottom, you will see the district breakdown. Thabo Mafutsinyane is where the most claims are in, and then 100% of these claims are rural claims. If we go to the next province, the next province is Gauteng. Gauteng has got about total claims 456. 443 is total outstanding. Pure outstanding is 434. There's a bit of a mixture in Gauteng where the delay are, but mostly it's regarding the business steps, process steps for research, and a whole host of delays coming to valuations and settlements. And the most number of claims, the district with the most number of claims are Tshwane, and 87% of these claims are rural in Gauteng. On the next slide, Chairperson, it's KwaZulu-Natal. This is the province with the highest number of claims outstanding. 2693 total outstanding, 104 are phased. Research, further research, 48% in further research. When it comes to the district claims breakdown, most of the district claims breakdown is around eThekwini. And then when it comes to the urban versus rural break, 58% is rural, 30% is urban, and then there's still a 3% to be determined. If we move to the next slide, we've got Limpopo province. Limpopo province is also one of the province with a high number of claims outstanding. Total outstanding is about 1,500. Pure outstanding is about 1,100. Then, Chairperson, if you look at the bottlenecks in the business process, 45% of the claims are at gazetting, and then there's a bit of a split between further research and settlements. Most of the claims outstanding in the district that's affected here is Sekukune. 97% of the claims are rural, and about 3% of the claims are urban. If we move to the next province, is Mpumalanga. Mpumalanga has got about 2010 total outstanding, and pure outstanding is 1,414. They also have a bit of a mixture between gazetting and further research, valuations, and settlement that their major blockages are. You will see at settlement about 26% delay. If you look at the districts, you will see it between Gertsebande and Kangala. And about 95% of the claims are rural claims and 5% of the claims are urban claims. Next province is the Northern Cape. The Northern Cape is the quite interesting, as I mentioned before, the number looks now 94. The total outstanding is about 83. Most of the delays are regarding valuation, mediation, and settlement, 51% in settlement. Apologies for the pronunciation, Chair. ZF Macau, I think, is the district with the highest number of claims outstanding. 71% are rural, 29% urban. This is a province where you can have one claim form and the number of portions of land linked to it, hectares, is almost 120,000 for a number of them. If we move to the next province, it's the Northwest. You will see, Chairperson, also a low number, 216 total outstanding. Pure outstanding is 25, and they've got a high number of phased claims. Now, they've got this high number because you will find a claim form is linked to multiple portions of land. And remember, multiple portions of land represent multiple landowners. And you will see there's almost a 68% which is falling at other. It's due to that multiple portions of land and then also valuations and settlement. Chairperson, here you can even have a claim form linked to 2,000 portions of land. The district is Nakamotiri Molema. and the breakdown between urban versus rural is about 96% rural and the rest is urban. And finally, the last province chairperson is the Western Cape. The Western Cape has got 503 pure outstanding, 496 PPO outstanding, 7 phased. This is mostly an urban province. About 38% is delays at valuation, 16% in settlement. The district with the highest number of breakdown is Cape Town. And then if you look at the rural versus urban strategy, you will see they've got more urban claims outstanding, about 89%, and 11% are rural. So if we move to the next slide, Chairperson, we can skip this slide also. So we've identified our statistical challenges. We've now verified and consolidated our information as of end of September. An apology for the typo on the presentation. We've got that information per province. So now we are in the next step of verification by an independent body to tell us what and underwrite it. So what we now need to do, a backlog strategy, Chairperson, and we've moved quite drastically in the development of our backlog strategy. So far, when you look at the second point, we've got our verified list of backlog claims. We've got a tracking tool that we've developed. We've got a technical task team that is assisting us, and we've got a draft backlog strategy. So if we just move to the next slide, Chairperson, we've identified priority areas and initiatives that we need to focus on to support us to meet our accelerate the settlement, Chairperson. We've also identified about 6 strategic objectives that we need to focus on. And one of the things that came out clearly, although I'll talk to it later, is that there's really a commission and a branch restitution, and that split must be enforced for accelerated work. If we can focus on the strategic objectives, Chairperson, we can and have the necessary resources, we can definitely accelerate the delivery. If I just move to the next slide for the sake of time, I just wanted to demonstrate here, Chairperson, this is basically how each provincial list of claims look like. This is what we'll also be utilizing to report to the court. We will also be every 6 months be able to report for every single claim and what has been the movement on the claim. So this is basically how our project management tool looks like, and the list of outstanding claims, this is basically how it looks like that we will be reporting on. Then let me start moving to the next slide just to talk about our process when it comes to us becoming autonomous commission, Chairperson. After extensive consultation with DPSA and Treasury, we've agreed to a process to be followed by the commission to become an independent entity. Chairperson, we are not being established as a new entity. DPSA has indicated to us clearly and also they've highlighted what the AG has said, that we are a commission in law. We've just not been operating like a commission. We have been under the Department of Land Affairs as a branch, then also under the Department of Rural Development as a branch, and now also under the Department of Agriculture, Land Reform and Rural Development. We are operating as a branch with our allocation under Program 4. They've also clearly indicated to us that they are in agreement with the AG finding that as a commission, we are an independent authority and we need to operate as an independent authority. We then unpack the processes that we need to follow to manage this transition. So I just want to confirm that we are in the process of developing a business case that we are looking at highlighting and submitting it to you early next year. We've also been requested by DPSA that we need to submit a memo to Cabinet to notify Cabinet of the processes that will be undertaken. that Cambridge memo, I know it's currently circulating within the department that's been submitted for sign-off for this notification to go through about the process the commission will undergo. After we've submitted the business case, they've explained to us that there will be assessment and approval process by cabinet of the business case. They've also highlighted to us point number four that there will be legislative amendments required. Our legislation is outdated. It's one of the first pieces of legislation post democracy. And there's many things. There's a PFMA, many systems and structures in government that has been established. We will also have to have a transition plan and an implementation plan that we will have to go through. If we just go to the next slide, Chairperson, it's been indicated to us that this entire process will take about 3 years. And when we look under background, the second point, bullet point, they've advised after we've gone through the various appropriate forms that we could be as a commission, they advised that the most appropriate form we could be as a public entity 3A. We went through all the assessments, whether we should be a government component, a chapter 9, a 3A, and a 3A was identified as the most appropriate form. So the business case that we are developing is linked to appropriate form for public entity 3A. On the next slide, I spoke to it previously, Chairperson, on if we just move on, Secretariat, please, because the slide is not moving. But the next slide, it's basically the process the Commission has been going through, how we've been under various forms in the past. I spoke about how we were established as a commission, and the presentation has now left, Chairperson. I don't know, I stopped there. There's no presentation on the slide. I've got it on my slide, Chairperson, on my side, which I can't share. I don't know, do you allow me to continue or do we wait for it to be loaded again?
Who has the presentation, the other slides? If someone has anyone from the department, maybe Ralph, you can upload it. If we don't have it, then I suggest you proceed.
Okay. Thank
can
you.
Can anyone confirm if the presentation is available?
There
it is, uploaded, you can proceed.
Thank you. So just to continue, Chairperson, the slide is just demonstrating the various forms the Commission has gone through over the years. Yes, we were established in 1994 as a Commission, and most of the claims went through the Land Claims Court. Interesting, from 1998, like I said, we've mostly been a branch under department in different forms. We had different number of RLCCs over the years, different formats that was utilized. It was decentralized in the past and then it was centralized. Key is that the DG remained the accounting officer. We had a structure of CLCC and DLCC. And a decentralized structure and also our administrative support from the PSSC. Mostly from 2009, 2010, we've had a centralization of the RLCC function, only one RLCC. We had many administrative processes that was amended. Minister withdrew delegations as to the threshold commissioners could sign off. There was also been different changes in how post-settlement was dealt with. So that just summarized that. Chairperson, I want to go to the next slide just to talk about the progress in the business case. And I have in the presentation attached all the chapters to give you a background on the progress for all the chapters of the business case. After consultation with Treasury and DPSA, we were advised these were the chapters to be covered within the business case. When it comes to the first chapter, the mission, objectives, and mandate, we have finalized that. The second chapter is legal implications, and we've also been requested to get an independent legal opinion regarding the legal implications. The state attorney's office assisted us with that, chairperson, and they gave a whole host of recommendations, mostly that as a commission, we qualify to function as a specialized service delivery unit as per the Public Service Act in the interim, and the most appropriate form for us is the 3A. They also advised regarding the governance structures, our functional structures, and so forth. We have made, after discussion with our other stakeholders, departments, governance structure proposal, which we are unpacking, chairperson. Organizational structure, we've developed an interim organizational structure for the interim. We are in discussion with the acting director general now about the transition and management of the interim organizational structure. Obviously, when we are autonomous entity and we've been listed, we will have an organizational structure linked to that. We've got a human resources plan because a lot of human resources management need to happen at the bargaining council, negotiated agreement, transfer of people's pensions, and all those sort of things. We also have a risk management plan, which is in draft. There's a technical task team next week, which we are referring to. Also from the AG's or opinion this year, they've indicated they need a strategic plan from the commission. We were anyway as part of the chapters for the business case busy with a strategic plan for the commission. So we will amend that strategic plan, chairperson, so we can submit it to adhere to the requirement by the AG. Yesterday we were busy with a touch-up on the strategic plan. We have not really started with the chapter on service delivery options because it's dependent on a host of outcomes from the other chapters. We are finalizing, we've got draft work on the financial management. Most of the financial management information, we are still awaiting the statistical verification. The corporate management plan, chairperson, we are also having a draft plan. And then stakeholder and communications plan, that one needs to be in detail. That one is not done yet. We basically need to explain the entire process and all the stakeholders that will be required to be engaged. If we move to the next slide, chairperson, this is what our strategic plan will look like in draft. It's very a rough draft, chairperson, but clearly, when it comes to our objectives, we've got four clear objectives that is the role of the commission, and we've got two objectives that are clearly the role of the branch restitution. If I can just briefly go to the objectives, the first one will deal with the commission adequately equipped to restore land rights for claims lodged before 1998. Those are our standard settlement finalizations. The third one deals with a clear organizational mandate in line with processes for appropriate structure. Point number five, it's a secure information system. And point number six, is adequate processes for new order claims. Then the other two, chairperson, is for the branch restitution specifically, is the establishment of a commission as an autonomous entity and then improve stakeholder management. As I said, chairperson, it's very rough. We are busy cleaning it. When it gets presented, there will be lots of improvement. Then if I just go to the next slide, chairperson, I want to talk to the redesign of the settlement models, and I'm almost finished. One of our outcomes that has been highlighted is the delay in the finance and settlement models, chairperson. We've identified, as I've presented previously, a whole host of sectors that as a commission for years, we've been having one settlement model, which is outdated. We've not taken into consideration sector policies and charters that have been updated. So we've done an extensive literature review, chairperson, of those specific sector policies and work. We are in the process of piloting that in 6 sites across a site for each province, and then we will have updated settlement models at some in about 18 months' time or so. In summary, Chairperson, I've presented the background on Project Fuyasa and CLCC. And Chairperson, thank you. Maybe I'll hand over to you.
Thank you to the Commission on Land Rights and Restitution. Honorable members, there's the presentation from Uma Mukoboto as well as Uma Mosindi. Let us then open for questions and discussion on the presentation on Project Kuyasa. Honorable Kape.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. Let me welcome the presentation, both presentation from the Commission. Chair, it will seem like we're repeating some of the issues here, because on our Tuesday meeting when we were dealing with Lamosa issues, part of Kuyasa matters are surfaced. But safe to say, Chair, my concern still remains the slow pace that the Commission seems to be moving in resolving restoration of land to the claimants. I just want to check with the Commission, Chair, if they can just indicate to us what's the difference between Operation Pakisa and Kuyasa project. I'm asking this because when you look at the objectives of both, they are similar. What is it that is making them different? And I'm saying this, Chair, because previously I remember I once said to the department, we seem to be hastily to run towards new programs or brands or names. We dump whatever we've been doing and move with a new name or something like that. Now, when you look at the objectives of this, they are similar. Can the Commission clarify to us how different are these two? Chair, research seems to be a major challenge when you look at, into the claims. All this that still has to be done, the research is a challenge. The Commission still, what is it that you're going to do with this matter? And I would want to implore this committee, Chairperson, that we must zoom into the operations of the Commission and check out how possible can we assist through oversight to make sure that acceleration of restoration of land is achieved. I want to check the last point, Chair. Well, since preparations were made before opening of lodgement process to ensure that readiness of the Commission is sought, what kind of preparation still is to be made again to ensure the readiness to process new order claims? So these are just the repetition of concerns that we indicated. But in the main, I have a challenge of distinguishing between Operation Pakisa and Kuyasa. Probably they must also indicate how what Pakisa has achieved. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Kape. Honorable Kapa.
Thank you, Chair. My problem here, I have some few issues. One is that there is a situation where it is said on it's ongoing on the settling of the, not where there was 656,558 outstanding claim, which is ongoing. To me, ongoing is vague. It may be ongoing, but at a very slow pace, and which may not be assisting. I need some clarity on when it's going. At what rate is it ongoing? Linked also to that is that there is this area which is referred to as a poor capacity of VG. And this, is this being attended to? If then it is, how is it being attended to? Because it is an issue. And the next one, there are two things that I'm failing to bring together here. There is an issue of the poor capacity, then the issue of trying to resolve the backlog of the claims. But on the other side, you have the budget cutting and the staff reduction. I'm failing to understand if those two can come to a solution. How can you be having those two opposing circumstances? And then the last one, there is also where the mention of the existence of external agents. I would like to see if whether this existence of this external agent is making any difference in this problem of Kiasa. I thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Kapa. Mama Spain.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I want to thank the presenter. I think we have received some better information, especially the provinces and the breakdown of what's happening there. Chairperson, some of the questions that I'm adding is regarding the operations within the department itself, understanding which sections of the branches, whether the commission or whether the department or who is responsible for that. So it's just clarity seeking questions, Chairperson. The first one would be, who is responsible to give the title deeds to the claimants once the cases has been settled? Because as far as I know, there's a whole lot of title deeds that's outstanding. I also am aware that some of the court cases that currently ongoing has got to do with the title deeds that was never received by the claimant. So if that can be clarified, we did get some short presentation on post-settlement, Chair, but I think that is also one of the challenges. First, if I can understand if it falls under the branch of the commission or whether it falls in another area of the department itself, who is responsible for the post-settlement, because I think these two issues, outside of the fact that it is not, there's a lot of outstanding claims, especially claims in the rural areas that still needs to be settled. This is a part of the problems that we are receiving on the ground. Chairperson, and that is linked to the question that I asked on Tuesday, and I would remind the Commission that we get a breakdown of the court cases so that we as the portfolio can understand what is the court cases that's currently still in court and the reasons shortly for each one of these court cases so that we can see if it's linked to research that has not been done properly, is it linked to outstanding issues regarding post-settlement, title deeds, and the other issues that we have mentioned. Then, Chairperson, just lastly, I've also asked the question on Tuesday. Once the Commission gazette claims, they still then have to go through a process. And I'm informed that there's a whole lot of cases that has been gazetted, but then afterwards found invalid, maybe through a court process or any other process that was followed. And that gazette then stays on the, I would almost say, the statute books of South Africa. And farmers are being challenged because if they want to work on the land or they want to sell it or do something else, a lot of that is then hampering them to proceed because there's nothing in the legislation that tells the department to de-gazette it, for lack of a better word. So So what is the process that needs to be followed, and whether the commission maybe can send a letter to a landowner once it was found to be invalid? That's all for me. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Stein. Honorable Ntate Matias. Ntate Matias.
He's not in the platform,
on
sir.
The platform. Yeah, I was just saying that. Thank you, Honorable Kabe. Maybe we take Honorable Montwedi. You want to come in at this point? Ntate Montwedi? Honorable Montwedi. Okay, we'll come back to him. Let's move on. The Honorable Marshall.
Good morning, Chair, and good morning to everyone. Chair, I would like to apologize by looking a bit late because of the challenge of the connectivity. My take in this matter is that one would like also to indeed appreciate the presentation made by the commission. But now my main problem which made me not to understand issues is that we had COVID-19 starting from the end of March with regard to the title deeds. During this time, how did they operate? I just wanted them to clarify me, how did they operate in issuing out the title deeds? And if that is the case, how many title deeds were issued out to different provinces with regard to the lands that supposed to the lease that was supposed to be given to our members of the farming community? Thank you.
Thank you, Mem Asho. Honorable Mamun Babam.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think we as a commission must really, no, as a committee, sorry, must really commend the ladies who are working in the commission, because they have a mammoth task that is severely under-resourced. An example of this is valuations taking on average 18 months. That is more than a year. It's a year and a half, in fact. And I really commend them for working and being able to analyze their problems. And you know, I feel that they are doing a very good job in terms of that. What we must realize is that they do need resources. Resources are the main thing that they need. And I am very much worried, and I'm sitting here trying to think, what can we as the committee do to assist in terms of resourcing the commission? They have a very important task to do. It's a very crucial task, and yet they are one of the most under-resourced, and I'm including the Value General in this, they are one of the most under-resourced sections of the department. It cannot carry on like that, Chair. We need to find a way of assisting them to have more resources. My question is, it seems that the urban claims are not as, what can I say, not as laborious, maybe that's the right word. They're not as cumbersome as the urban claims. And I was wondering if the commissioner could not initially concentrate on the urban ones as quick wins, because I'm sure they don't have the complexity of the rural claims. And I'm not saying that they must take their eye away from the rural claims, but surely an urban place is easier to value. It's easier, I think, to find even the people who are still living there. So could they not complete the urban ones completely as a quick win? That's just a question from me as an outsider, not having 100% understanding of the problem. And then, Chair, I was privileged to be in the 5th Parliament under rural development and land reform. And this idea or this this thing of the commission transitioning to be an autonomous department or not a department, but an entity on itself has been discussed at length in the 5th Parliament. And I'm just wondering whether the commission has started afresh again in their plans. What about the plans that were there in the 5th Parliament? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Mamumba Balma. Akpare Breed, hoe gaan dit?
Goed en self, voorzitter. Thank you so much, Chairperson. I'm going to try and be quick. I think the rest of the committee did quite mention my questions as well, and I also want to commend the commission for the woman in charge. It's really good to see competent women taking the steer and really handling themselves well, despite all the troubles they seem to be facing. Chairperson, my two biggest worries is also the title deeds, but I think Honourable Sain covered that, and I think Honourable Tapa covered it in terms of the OVG. That has continually been my worry, and as Honourable Mbabama has said, to have 18 months, and I think that's to a large extent the reason we are battling with the old order claims and cannot seem to be handling them, is the fact that it takes so long. So that are just my two biggest concerns, and maybe just the last maybe a clarity-seeking question from my side. In terms of the claims, what are listed? I know of one specific claim that has already been in the process and in making for about 10 years, where they the claimants want land. They do not want to settle for money. And maybe let me talk about the example that would maybe maybe assist me in explaining. And every time a new piece of land is found for them, and then a department of sorts, either Department of Public Works or then Education says something, or then this or that, and they are in that process and struggling to actually find a piece of land that government can avail to them in that regard. I would like to know whether those claims are also included in these outstanding claims, and how are they envisioning? I think we are standing with a specific family. I think 5 times they've been allocated land, and then one or other provincial or national department comes back and says, no, we actually want that. How are we actually envisioning on actually achieving and finishing these land claims, old order claims, if we have problems like that, Chairperson? That is all from my side. Thanks.
Thank you, Honorable Mama Briet. Ndabezitha has tendered an apology and is not with us on this session. We move on, Honorable Tshwete. Mama Tshwete, are you with us? I don't see her on the platform. We'll move on. Honorable Muntwedi. Tate Muntwedi. The Honorable Memahlatsi.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Good morning, colleagues, and good morning to the department, as well as the commissioner and all the officials in the commission. Chairperson, let me start with where Honorable...
Before you go on, Honorable Matlape, are you able to switch on your video, please?
No, Chair, the network here is quite bad.
Okay.
It's quite bad. I apologize for that. Yeah.
All right. Please proceed then.
All right. Let me first and foremost start where Honorable Tlhapane started with the difference between Project WEASA and Operation Pakis. I want to reiterate what she has indicated earlier, that we need to really get clarity in terms of whether there are differences between the two projects and whether what were the lessons learned if we have now moved to Project WEASA. Number two, Chair, when you go through the presentation and in as far as capturing of claims, it seems like the commission is still utilizing the manual system. So I just wanted to find out from them, is there any way where we can look into internal data analysis with a systematic a data approach so that we do not lose, like Honorable Steyn has indicated on Tuesday, that there could be information that might have been lost through the process of maneuvering from one system to another. And when will they have a system that is electronic? Now, moving towards issues of research capacity. In the Tuesday meeting, and I think, I'm not sure whether in the presentation I might have missed it, where there was an indication that the commission had previously used consultants, but the outcome of that process or procurement of such services had not bear any fruitful fruits. However, I want to check from the commission, besides the consultants, is there any way of building this research capacity, especially with the research institutes, or do they have any relationship with institutions of higher learning where they can utilize such services in ensuring that we have the necessary research capacity at the institution? Number three, Chair, is on OVG. Indeed, the commission had always indicated their frustration with the OVG from the beginning of the term, in as far as how, because they have indicated even on Tuesday that OVG is an entity on its own, therefore they've got no mandate into how to tell them what to do, when, how, besides having SLA that speaks to terms of reference and time frames. But I would like to understand the terms of reference between themselves and the OVG, and whether these terms of reference, since at the signing of the SLA, have they actually brought any progressive turnaround strategy in terms of the time frame to reduce the 18 months that we've been dealing with? The last one, Chairperson, is on the human financial capacity as well as the autonomy. I want to check with the, as honorable members have indicated in this meeting, Chair, that one, the commission is strained by the financial and human capacity. What I would like to know from the commission, what is it that we need to do? Or what will make the commission function better? What is it that needs to happen? Because I think we need to speak to that part, because since the beginning of the term, we've been having challenges at the commission, not that the institution or officials in this particular are incompetent, there could be challenges, but maybe we need to have a spreadsheet to say, this is what we need. If we can get this, this will make the commission to function better, as well as the road to autonomy, Chair. Maybe we need a, because I saw on the presentation, there is a slide that speaks about the road towards autonomy. But maybe what we need to have now is progress made thus far to say, how far are we? Whether the following steps indeed have they been achieved, and this is how far we are in terms of finally reaching this autonomy. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Mema Sati. The Honorable Ntate Masipa.
Thank you, Chair. I must say thank you to the Commission for the good presentation. I do like it, I must say, Chair. My question with regards to the concerns that the policy gaps during the previous presentation, that were identified were not covered. I think they are covered in this one, so I'm covered on that part. But here's my thought, Chair, is that our people obviously are becoming extremely impatient about the department's slow process in managing the claims. I think the best way that maybe we could be able to assist the department is to first understand, obviously, you know, the personnel within this commission in terms of their capacity, their qualification, their ability to deliver the mandate of processing this land claim. So if the department can share with us in terms of their personnel in their commission in various provinces, in terms of the profile of the people that are in those positions, I think that will be crucial in terms of really us being able to really zoom in and make inputs with regards to how we think they need to do in terms of going forward. Further, the other thing is that I like the program. I think the question is the department considering keeping it live so that claimants can have access to this system in order to see where their process is around, you know, their claims? Because I think that will also, you know, relieve lots of pressure onto the commission in terms of people, you know, consistently, you know, inquiring about their claim. And if the system can be made, you know, live, so that people can really be able to go and access the system and obviously look at the state where their claims are. That's my few inputs, Chair, but otherwise I think the system is great and I think the partnership will be crucial in order, you know, to make sure that really they speed up this. I agree with Ms. Hape when she says that, you know, bring other role players, you know, to assist you in terms of really capacitating yourself. If you cannot really do it yourself, you know, because capacity, I think, has been raised a few times with regards to this particular commission. I thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Ntate Masipa. Honorable Montwedi. Or any other honorable member that I've missed out who may have wanted to pose a question? Honorable members, let me also then take an opportunity to pose some of questions to the presentation from Cindy and Umamu Koboto, as I believe that Project Kuyasa should not be seen in isolation from the interventions that were attempted in the past, which have not yielded any positive outcomes. For example, I'd refer to the mini Pakisa for land reform. There was a plan to establish the project management unit organized in four work streams, i.e. the operations management, change and people management, funding options, and piloting funding options, and organizational form. The chief land claims commissioner, what has become of the mini Pakisa and what did it achieve? And we would need to know, or ask rather, honorable members, will Project Kuyasa become another that may not result in tangible result? We should, therefore, honorable members, by all means prevent this and ensure that the commission realizes its autonomy within the specified timelines. The question that follows is, where do the 3 years target for completion of the transition to autonomy come to an end? And we note that Project QSI has been under discussion for over a year now. For us, honorable members, Project QSI seems to be involving services of external agents or services providers. What are the key areas of the project, including implementation, that are outsourced? And what is the total cost of outsourced work? There also seems to be 8 outstanding claims in the Free State. How many officials are based in the Free State office? Can the commissioner therefore be able to tell us what an ordinary day of an official in the Free State office is like? We are asking this question to determine if there are perhaps 20 officials researching 8 claims or not. Are the state farms that have claims and are yet to be settled? What are the impediments to the settlement of those land claims? In the list of state land advertised by the Honorable Minister Mamuti Diza, are the farms advertised whereas they are unsettled land claims? If yes, did the Commission not participate in the process of identification and verification of the if there were land claims or not? With regards to redesign of settlement models in slide 38, we are concerned, honorable members, about the delays in finalization of the redesign of settlement models. Our concern is mainly related to the possible unintended consequences of the revised model. Let's say, for argument's sake, the new policy provides for payment of compensation that is higher than what was previously paid to claimants. Claimants may lodge complaints of underpayment due to new policy. This may expose the state of major claims when claimants demand retrospective application of the policy. What is the Commission's view about this matter? That would be all on my end, honorable members. Let us now hand back to our presenters from the Commission.
Thank you very much, honorable Chair. I hope you can hear me. And
yes, you're audible. You're audible, Madam Koboto. You may go ahead.
And thank you to the members for the questions. I have Cindy and Benyani who will assist with the some of the questions, as well as Freddy Maputa, who's the Regional Land Claims Commissioner, will also assist. But perhaps if I then start at the first question on the slow pace from Mamutrap. I will leave the question on the separation between Operation Patisa and Buyasa to Cindy to respond to. The second question was, what is the preparation needed in relation to the new order claims that we're making reference to? I think, Chair, if you analyze the presentation that we've made, and also you look at some of the stuff that we submitted on Tuesday around our challenges to the court, you will note, as we've already indicated, that we have a challenge, as we've indicated, we've identified the 3 backlog areas in our business process. But secondly, we've said that the issue is that the Commission, as it stands, is not adequately capacitated. And thirdly, we're saying that the commission as a branch in the department has found itself now doing more work than it is supposed to be doing with much less staff. In the Lamusa report, we indicated that currently we're operating at about 45% capacity to the establishment that was set up then. And with the new department, the posts that were vacant have been de-established, and so they've even reduced the number of staff in terms of the capacity that they understand to be what the commission represents. Further, if you think about the fact that the commission as it stands now as a branch in the department is doing work of three different units. The commission in law, as I indicated, is supposed to receive, investigate, and recommend for settlement. That's what the commission is supposed to be doing. Made an example of the Truth and Reconciliation Commission. It investigated and submitted the report. Then, because in law, the person who has the mandate to do restitution is the Minister of Agriculture, Land Reform and Rural Development. And so the commission is supposed to assist the minister to be able to implement restitution by being able to investigate the claims and say to the minister, we recommend that you settle this claim on the basis that our research says this is a valid claim. And then the branch restitution effects the settlement on behalf of the minister, because it's not the commission that is supposed to effect the settlement, that is transferring until the last, into the entity and making sure that the last cent is paid to the beneficiaries. And then the third element is the question of post-settlement, which is around the sustainability of whatever it is that has been restored. From some instances, like in the Free State, housing units that were to be built, to a tourism venture in the Eastern Cape, and all of those things. So, and then to add a fourth element, you've got the CPAs, which and the Communal Property Association is legally managed by the department, and the DG is allocated as the person who has to oversee. So if you, and then perhaps you add the OVG as well as a vector. And then you look at all of those things that are things that the commission should not be doing, because the commission is supposed to investigate. But the commission, with the 45% capacity of staff, does all of those things. And chairperson, you'd be aware, for example, if you get an inquiry about a claim that was settled in 2002, the inquiry doesn't go to the DG of the department. If it does go, it comes back to me. So if I am dealing with issues of claims that were settled in 2002, whether it is CPA fighting about who should be getting the benefit or shouldn't, and I'm dealing with the current claims, I have to deal with post-settlement, I have to effect the settlement and transfer of the claim. So those are some of the challenges. And I'm trying to just give a big picture view of the analysis that we've done. And we even roughly did an analysis of how much work time does a project officer spend on settlement. And we said around 40% of their capacity is spent on post-settlement, which has got nothing to do with restitution or commission work. But we're acknowledging that even the DG has qualified us as a result of that. As they say, you are not operating like as a commission. So you will now operate as a commission. We're saying sharply that urgently we need to now separate ourselves from the department and have a commission that is going to investigate and recommend, and have a restitution branch which is going to effect the settlement on behalf of the minister, because at the end of the day, as I said, the minister is the one who settles. And therefore, Chair, we are preparing, as Cindy has already indicated, a plan that will speak to both the Commission's obligations and the branch restitution's obligations. Because as it stands, Elingane Buhato, who's the head of the Northwest Province, has a responsibility which is dual responsibility. He assists the Commission to investigate and recommend, and he assists the Minister on this side as branch restitution to effect the recommendation. So that is the broad challenge that we're sitting with. Over and above that, the question of the how quickly can you deal with the outstanding claims? And I've been saying that through the project, we've identified where our challenges are, where the bottlenecks are, and what we need to do, and we're attending to those. But the proviso is always, provided that we get the necessary resources, whether it's human resource or financial resource, to be able to unlock these things that we're identifying. And if I say in the context of the last 8 years, bar the introduction of the OVG, we were meeting our targets and spending our budget every year, and the household budget is where we buy the farms or the property or pay financial compensation. And that allocation is around 2.4 at most over the years, billion. And if every year we've spent that amount of money and we've had to wait for the financial year following, that should say that if you were to say to me, the 6,000 plus claims that are outstanding now, if you say to me, I should finish those claims next year. In the context of what the Commission is supposed to do, which is to research and recommend, we can say that we've got a research strategy in place that we're working on, but not finalized, and we can do that, the recommendation. But in the context of implementing the recommendation, which is branch restitution, how much money are we going to need for us to be able to do that? And if our allocation is 2.4 billion to purchase, we would overcommit the state, because if at the height of our performance we were dealing with between 800 to 1,000 claims that we could settle and transfer. So if you then say take 6,000 and settle them next year, where is the money for us to be able to do that? So I think that for me, it's important that as we do the analysis and as we get the feedback that says, when are you intending to finish? The question that I should be posing is, do we have the necessary resource capacity to be able to do this? Because we are saying that we've put our ducks in a row. We know what we need to do, but we would need to have the resources for us to be able to deal with it. Sorry, Chair, for the long answer, but I was hoping that I sort of give a sense of the challenge. And so you have to have the Commission as an independent entity, but you have branch restitution, which is effecting the recommendation on behalf of the Minister. The issue of OVG, that's question number two from the Honorable Kappa. We've already indicated that we've got challenges, but I've asked Mr. Maputa to answer on whether there have been any changes with regards to SLA. So on your question around when do we intend to resolve the backlog, we can tell you we can finalize, which means that we've transferred everything, every cent in the next to the 6,000 claims outstanding in the next 3 or 5 years. But if the money is not available for us to do that, then we would be doing what we call malicious compliance, to just answer the question. So for me, I think that we would rather ensure that we finish with the project and submit formally to all of the relevant people. We are speaking to the National Treasury, and they are part of our planning processes to guide and understand also what the challenges are. The question on the budget that is being cut, I think that's another question for me. Remember that we are under the department, and if the National Treasury says to the department, CFO, we want to take 2% across the board, because we are a branch in the department, although I am the Chief Land Claims Commissioner, I have no say. I can say to the department, I don't agree because you are compromising performance in my unit. I get reminded that I am branch 3 of the department, and so the cut will affect me as well. And so this year, as I have already indicated, we lost about 400 plus million, which was taken. And it was not because we offered that it be taken. To Honorable Steyn, the difference, I think I've already highlighted on the responsibility. It's the analysis that we've done. And if you also look at the various reviews that we're talking about, which have said that the conditions has become too close, has become embroiled or mud into the department, and as a result, the roles have become very blurred. So in law, as I said, the commission is defined, branch restitution is implementing the settlement for the minister, post-settlement sits with the branch, with the department. But as I said, as it stands, all of those things get well, the commission indirectly is supposed to do them. If you look at post-settlement support, the current minister, when she came in about almost 2 years now, indicated very clearly that the commission is not responsible for post-settlement. So a team of DDGs has been set up to ensure that it deals with the question of post-settlement. And so to answer your question, post-settlement sits with the department. And we will provide a breakdown of the matters that are in court. A lot of the time, the matters that are in court is because the parties are disagreeing about the settlement amount or whether the claim is valid, or there are competing rights there and the various parties are challenging. But we will make those available. On the question of gazetting of claims, procedurally, a claim is gazetted. And once the claim has been identified as a claim that is not valid, it is supposed to be degazetted. So I have no problem with your recommendation on us writing letters, because that's what we do anyway. But if there are specific areas where degazetting did not happen, I would be happy to take that so that I can sort that out. But we will, as for process, we will also communicate with the various provinces to ensure that they deal with this thing decisively. Honorable Marshall, the title is again, I know that there was an issue of whether we, even Honorable Steyn did ask whether we are handing over title deeds. As soon as a claim has been, the land has been transferred to the beneficiaries, the title deeds do get transferred. But we are aware of instances. For example, I know in Limpopo that they had a number of title deeds that had not been transferred, and we were working on ensuring that they transfer those title deeds. But in certain instances, the deeds cannot be transferred where the matter is still being litigated, or where we've identified that there are major challenges on the ground with the CPA and the like, and we know that if we were to transfer the title deed, it would create even more challenges in terms of the misuse or even the selling of the land. And so again, we then rely on the department that is responsible for CPAs to help manage the CPA issues so that we can then transfer. But it's a matter that we are working on in terms of transparency. So for the claims that have been recently settled and the parties and the CPA is in order, we immediately transfer the land. We don't wait. To Honorable Mbabama, yes, the urban claims very often are less complex because, as you say, they are registered rights, easy to identify in the deeds office, and so we do focus on these claims. But even as we do so, we also have to try and balance the needs in the rural areas, because you find that urban claims mostly will be a family maybe one or two, a family of two, and so the benefit then is smaller than in the communal areas where you have one claim which will benefit thousands, 2,000, 5,000. So we have to at times make sure that we look at that balance, and also we have to take into consideration the needs that is there, and so not focus just on the urban claims, but we do focus on them. Cindy will deal with the issue of the autonomy and the fact that we spoke about this in the fifth parliament as well. As Mr. Maputa from Mayor Breed will answer the question of the OBG challenges. The land that is owned by other departments can be a challenge at times, in the sense that we've got a lot of state land that is owned by Department of Public Works. So if there's a claim there, we still have a process that we have to undertake with Public Works to ask them to release the land. And before they release the land, they have to identify whether the land is under use or maybe a state entity intended to use the land. And if there is no intention, then the Minister of Public Works has communicated clearly that they have no problem in releasing that land. But even though they will release, there's still a whole lot of approvals that we have to wait for from Public Works before the land has to be released. It's work that we're dealing with Public Works. We've got joint units that are working with them to try and resolve this. And we are being assisted also by the Interministerial Committee on Land Reform under the Deputy President. So in the context of land that has been identified for a specific community and is available, and maybe we're having challenges to get that land, we can, under Section 42E, decide to expropriate the land for the claimants if the land is available. But again, the question of expropriation still deals with, you have to use the three legislation. You have to use the Restitution Act. You have to use the current Expropriation Act of 1975. You have to deal with PAJA. I'll tell you the full. And then you also have to consider Section 25(3) of the Constitution, which talks just an equitable compensation. In fact, you have to use the OBG's legislation as well, which is a PVA. And currently, the Expropriation Act 75 elevated market value. And so in the context of expropriation that has happened under Section 42E of the Restitution Act in the past, the expropriation still considered the question of market value, including a solo. That is expropriation that happened as far back as 2006. I think the first one in the Northern Cape province. Still a challenge. Cindy, you will talk to the capturing of data, possibly on an electronic basis, from Honorable Matas. OBG capacity will talk to, I've already indicated that with regards to human resource capacity, we don't have capacity, but I appreciate the question that you're asking around what is it that you would need for us to be able to function better. I think Project Kuyasa is beginning to make those responses. Perhaps what we could do for the committee is to create a project plan with timelines showing you exactly what it is that we say we need and what it is that we're doing about that need and our timelines as well. Honorable Masipa, I acknowledge your request for a personal profile of the people who are working in the commission. We noted that and we'll make that available. Honorable Mandela, the issue, Ucindi will speak to the issue of the mini Pakisa and the Kuyasa. And the Free State Office as you saw in the presentation, we've got 8 claims that are outstanding there, but all 8 of those are sitting in the Land Claims Court for adjudication. The officials in the Free State are assisting in other provinces. Some of them have temporarily gone to work in those other provinces, including national office. They are also, Usin Dibenyane has had sessions with the Free State office where they are working with the Northern Cape province to assist with the work there. So that is what is happening. I think what we understand is that we've got one commission, and so until all of the work has been done in all the provinces, we can't say that we will deal with the new order claims in that context. So what we do is that we then spread the capacity to the other offices that still need the capacity or the support. The farms that the minister has been talking about, which are state owned farms, are not restitution are farms that are under claim. We did do a review with the department, and we identified what were claims that are under farms that are under claim. But this does not include the farms that possibly could be under claim on the new order claims, because we were not allowed to look at those in law according to the Lamusa judgment. Not that, Chair, there could not be maybe one or two that would have been identified, maybe that we missed, but generally, overall, we have been able to identify all of the ones that are under claim, and so they are not included in the numbers that the Minister is talking about. And the issue of the redesign of the settlement models, again, Chair, that would be the work of branch restitution and not the Commission. But because we understand the business process, we are cooperating with the department and other stakeholders to try and streamline our processes and redefine some of the settlement models. We are very aware that we are doing this at a late stage, and so we are not going to be doing things completely new, but we are going to be focusing and having targeted approaches to our settlement models, including using the ones, some of them that have worked, and also ensuring that we comply with the policy that is still at play. Again, the issue of settlement models is not commission work. It has to be the department that has to take responsibility for settlement models, because at the end of the day, they have to ensure that whatever land has been transferred is made to be usable and sustainable. So I think that the questions would be the one for Cindy and Mr. Maputa on the OVG. If you will allow me, Chair, can I hand over to them?
Please do go ahead.
Thank you, CLCC, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. I just want to start on the explanation between the Pakisa and the Kuyasa. Chairperson, when we undertook the Pakisa process, we had to approach GTEC, the Government Technical Advisory Center. They are sitting under National Treasury, because we identified that we don't have the key capabilities to develop and craft the problem statement we had under Pakisa. Under Pakisa, they identified 5 high-level outcomes for us after they've analyzed our problem statement, and I'm going to talk to every high-level outcome linked to Pakisa. The first one is they developed an operating model for us. They reviewed our operating for us, operation for the commission to be better poised to deal with our current and future demands. They focused on the old order claims as well as the new order claim forms. Some of the recommendations they advised us, they said as a commission, we are not acting according to our legislative mandate. We are also doing work as post-settlement, and we are also doing other work that they deemed not being related to post-settlement, but
oppose the settlement of a claim. Since that has been done, Chairperson, under Kuyasa, we have reviewed our structures. We've got both the interim and we've also got a related 3A structure. We clearly know we need to operate as a commission as per the Act, a branch restitution, and that post-settlement falls outside the mandate of the commission. We have also made recommendations within our operating model regarding the decentralization of the Regional Land Claims Commission function, which we have demonstrated today, which is in our structure. We also clearly demonstrated the separation between the accounting officer's function under the branch restitution and the commission. So that first outcome we've basically addressed has led us to outcome 2 that I've presented today under Kuyasa. Outcome 2 under the Mini Pakisa, they indicated that we have to redesign the claims process, and I will never in my life forget the example that they shared with us, that specific day that I will share with you. They made the example of Department of Home Affairs. If you remember, Honorable Member, sometime in Home Affairs, yes, we've got 2 totally different matters we are dealing with. In Home Affairs, it took you a number of years to wait for an ID and a passport, and they explained the 80-step process that Home Affairs went through and where the delays were. As the commission, we've identified that we take on average 248 weeks to settle a claim. And we've set a target to implement over the next few years under Kuyasa to reduce it to 81 weeks based on the examples we took from Home Affairs. So that was in addressing the matter under outcome 2. So outcome 2 and outcome 3 are related from Mini Pakisa. We had to also propose key capabilities to redesign the process. Now I want to talk about this old system. We've got an old paper-based system, Chairperson. So for honorable members, maybe I've skipped it or it didn't come out clearly, but we've redesigned our business processes and we've got our business processes up to a level 3 design currently. These business processes are currently being audited and we are getting assistance from the department to audit the level 3 business processes. Once the level 3 has been done, we will go into module development, which will basically lead to an electronic end-to-end system, which we will utilize both for the old order and new order. We've also been advised that we should have some sort of interface with the public at some point in time when we design the system, so people can follow up where their claims are. So we are looking from the outcome 2 and outcome 3 from Pakisa to lead to that specific matter. Outcome 4 under Pakisa dealt with the proposed governance structure that we had to look at. Beside the issue regarding the number of commissioners, they also advised us about governance structures related to the appropriate form, Chairperson. We've gone to the extent that we've broken down the comparisons for the various possible type of entities could be, such as a public entity, a government component, or a trading entity. We have looked at a whole host of factors from our legal status, our main fundings, our mandate, and all those sort of things. Today, I've explained as part of the autonomy process, yes, we've referred to the autonomy, but Pakisa guided us on the way forward. We are currently actually busy with the business case for autonomy, and the work that is in the business case required specialist expertise that the commission does not have to undertake. Then also the delays under the autonomy process are mostly regarding the legislative mandates that are required as a chapter I've presented and so forth. So we've also addressed the 4th outcome under the Mini Pakisa. And Chairperson, the last outcome under the Mini Pakisa was the high-level implementation plan to guide the commission. The high-level implementation plan, Chairperson, is basically the project plan for Kuyasa that we've presented previously that we are currently implementing. For now, we are reporting regularly on the progress of Project Kuyasa. So at no point in time, Chairperson, we have disregarded the PAKISA outcomes that was made to us. We are appreciative of the advice we got from GTEC on how they helped us craft our problem statement. And we are basically implementing that, but some of the challenge I will acknowledge and some of the delays are due to lack of resourcing. We are definitely working towards an improved commission that can restore or settle claims much quicker so we can reduce the turnaround time so we don't have this 248 weeks scenarios that we've got. And also, Chairperson, we will definitely take into consideration some of the points the honorable members made regarding the redesign of the electronic system. Thank you, RLCC. Over to you, if you allow me, Chairperson.
All right, please proceed.
Thank you, Chairperson. And honorable members, I am required to answer the question on whether there has been an improvement since a service level agreement was signed between the Commission and the
Ombudsman. Dr. Maputa, please switch on your video. Please switch on your video.
Chairperson, I'm trying to switch on my video, but it doesn't open. Can I just go ahead, Chairperson?
All right, go ahead.
Oh yeah, so I was asked to respond on the question of whether there has been an improvement in the work since there has been a service level agreement signed between the Commission and the Office of the Valuer General. Chairperson, there has been an improvement. Lately, we have been receiving a number of certificates informing us that the Office of the Valuer General has been able to conduct valuations on the work that was assigned to them. However, this improvement has been very minimal. We are still struggling with the Office of the Valuer General answering queries whenever there are queries to be made on the evaluations. So the department has issued a circular. In terms of that circular, the Commission is going to be allowed to conduct valuations. However, the Office of the Valuer General will be expected to do quality assurance on those valuations that have been conducted. In other words, the Valuer General will continue to make sure that when valuations were done, the amount of money, in other words, the price allocated has been done in accordance with provisions of Section 25(3) of the Constitution within the just and equitable framework. So we are hoping that this will ensure that there is improvement on the ability of the Commission to finalize claims, because now the volume of work that is currently on the OVG is going to be reduced. Their work is only going to be to conduct quality assurance on those valuations, while the Commission for its part conducts those valuations. The only problem that we are anticipating in this regard is that we are still going to be relying on the supply chain processes of the department. However, since we are in the process of finalizing service level agreements with them, we also hope that this will not continue to be a bottleneck going forward. Thank you, Chairperson.
Mamukoboto. Yeah, not audible, Mamukoboto.
Chair, I wanted to say that the issues that obtained in the Office of the Valuer General are the operational issues, but also that the RSC didn't speak about is the review that is necessary when a landowner or a claimant is contesting the values that the VG has placed on the table. That also requires that they are able to argue their position in court, and we find that sometimes the processes are not very clear. For example, we've got a matter that is in court, I think it's called the Muloto case, where the landowners are challenging the calculation or what the VG's office uses as their standard to calculate Section 25(3). And so in that instance, it requires that the OVG's office must then go and argue on the question on how they got to that determination. And also there has to be clarification on the compensation which is offered by the minister versus the recommendation on a value offered by the Valuer General. So there are other nuanced issues that still need to be sorted out around the Office of the Valuer General, around court's expert opinion that gets presented in court. By who is it? The minister who presents, or is the VG's office on behalf of the minister? And also because the valuations are done by independent third parties, very often it's the independent third parties who must then be the experts in court. And whether they understand Section 25(3) interpretation then becomes another matter. But my last comment, Chair, is to say that there is no separation between Operation Pakisa, Mini Pakisa, and Guyasa. What we are doing is implementing the recommendations that came out, because, as Cindy said, Pakisa basically said fast track. So we said, what do you mean? We needed to break down fast track. So the Mini Pakisa was breaking down the fast tracking, and the recommendations that came out of the Mini Pakisa is what we're implementing through this project. We are. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you to the Commission for the answers that you have tendered. Honorable members, any follow-up questions? And I'll look for hands. Honorable Kape.
Chair, I'm good, thanks. I think the response from the team has covered most of the issues. Thanks.
Thank you, Honorable Stein. Honorable Stein, any follow-up questions? Honorable Marshall. Honorable Marshall. Honorable Masati.
Chairperson, thank you very much. My follow-up question will be on the research capacity. I might not have heard the response on the matter. I requested, I asked about any other institution that might be user-friendly to the Commission in as far as them building relations with institutions of higher learning and research in relation to research capacity or other institutions, given their challenges with the research capacity. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Mayor Mahlatsi. Honorable Masipa.
Thank you, Chair. I think the follow-up question is related to what, sorry, my camera is stuck. What Metape just, Mematazi just asked regarding the question about the partnership in ensuring that they increase their capacity. That's the first one. I think the second one is that I have asked whether the department, the commission is considering looking at making the system live so that the claimants can be able to track their claims in order to alleviate pressures on the under-resourced situation that they are experiencing. Thank you, Chair. That's just my two follow-ups.
Thank you, Honorable Montwedi. Any other honorable member who may wish to pose a question? Follow-up question? Mamu Kaboto, over to you.
Thank you very much, Chair. And let me apologize for not responding to Honorable Matlatsi's question. As we indicated, we have challenges in the context of our research capacity because the same people who do research are the same people who negotiate, consult with communities and deal with claims. But what we have done after having identified the work that still needs to be done is that we are setting up provincial research units in the three provinces that have the highest number of outstanding claims, being KZN, Limpopo and Mpumalanga. And the strategy is not complete. I'm still consulting with the provinces, but we are breaking down the type of research from your easy to the medium and to the complex, and we will only target external research capacity for the complex one. But what we want to do is we've identified the project officers who are very good at doing research, and we will block them into focusing just on the research, which then will be vetted by the quality control committee that deals with research. And we also intend to then outsource the ones where, for example, we've got various issues like proclamations and overlapping rights, and those to targeted service providers, because we have when I say targeted, it's something that we'll have to ask for permission to do. Because in our lessons learned from the strategy that we used of using external service providers, we did target universities. But what we've learned is that in some instances, we didn't actually get the direct universities. We ended up with entities of the universities. And in some instances, we got very good work. And in some instances, we got very bad work. To the extent that some of the research reports, even when it is supposed to be presented before court, we've had to review the work ourselves internally. So what we will be doing is targeting those universities that have given us very good work. But in order for us to be able to target them, we'll have to go and ask for permission to do so, because otherwise we'll be operating outside of the procurement process. But the good thing is that the process of the listing of all of those service providers has now expired their contract. So we are now looking at a different strategy. It's not finalized yet, but that's the strategy, is that targeted research units in the three, getting possibly external graduates who graduated, who've got the skills to be able to add some form of capacity there for a short period, so that we target that the easy medium research that needs to be done, and then identify the complex ones, which then will be given to those specific targeted research institutions that have done well in terms of their style, because our research is not your general historic research. It has to have a legal nuance in terms of interpretation of what the Restitution Act requires. So that's what we're going to be presenting to the minister as a proposal for research. So the institution is, so I've already said we are targeting some, and some we are definitely deciding that we should part with because they have not assisted us. If I were to give you examples of some of the research reports that we get from these institutions, very little solutions provided for us. I think on the issue asked by Honorable Masipa, I think Cindy answered the question in that we are planning to use this already. We've created a reporting tool, electronic reporting tool, through Kuyasa, but it's now being piloted in some of the provinces, and we are intending to use this as an end-to-end business management where we're able to deal with claims electronically, including allowing communities to be able to have a database where they can access or identify where their claims are. We're planning to be able to use this for those old order claims, and if the new order claims get dealt with, or when we get the mandate to do so, that we use the same system. So the answer is yes. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Commissioner Mamukoboto, for your responses. And let us also thank the entire team from the Commission who has been able to present with you and also give responses to the questions of clarity that were posed by the Honorable Members. Honorable Members, this brings us to the end of the presentation on Project Kuyasa. We will now afford the opportunity for the Commission and its officials to take leave as we proceed with other matters of the committee. Commissioner Mamukoboto and Cindy and Tate Maphutha and other officials that were with us, let us take this opportunity to thank you very much for the presentation put to the committee, and we look forward to further development and monitoring of how Project Kuyasa unfolds. You may take leave, and please do have a wonderful weekend ahead and enjoy it. Spend well with your families, stay safe and be protected during these challenging times of COVID-19. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair, and to appreciate the work of the Commission, of the Committee, and we will continue to engage and seek your assistance. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye. Honorable Members, as we allow the Commissioner and the officials of the Commission to take leave, we will be dealing with our department, or the former Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries, BRRR report, which we need to adopt, as we had requested some amendments to be effected into the report. So we will then ask for the secretariat to upload it so we can just go page by page on it and then come to the adoption of the report. Manyamza. Makay.
Tabasu.
Yes, can you upload the report?
Oh, Miss Mkashe is busy with that.
Oh, Mam Kashe.
Morning, Chair.
Uphilile, Mama.
Siyaphila, Chair, and Nkosi njani wena?
Ah, siyaphila, nathi akabikhona. Can you assist us with uploading of the report?
Yes, Chair. Is it easy
for the Chair? Yeah, that is uploaded. Just trying to ensure it's, yeah, we can proceed, honorable members. Page one, page two, page three, page four, page five, page six, page seven, page eight, page nine, page 10. Page 11. Page 12. Page 13. Page 14. Page 15. Page 16. Page 17. Page 18. Page 19. Page 20. page 21. Page 22. Page 23. Page 24. Page 25. Page 26. Page 27. Page 28. Page 29. Page 30. page 31. Page 32. Page 33. Page 34. Page 35. Page 36. Page 37. Page 38. Page 39. Page 40. Page 41. Page 42. Page 43. Page 44. Page 45. Page 46. Page 47. Page 48. Page 49. Page 50. Page 51. Page 52. Page 53. Honorable members, that brings us to the end of our report on the former Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries. Can I have a mover for the adoption of the report?
Chairperson, this is Honourable Breit. I will move for the adoption, and I want to commend the committee staff. They have once again outshone us, and I don't think I would have been able to put it better into words myself.
Thank you, Akpare Breit, for the adoption of the report of the former Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries. Can I have a seconder?
Chair.
Honorable
I move Arbe. To second Honorable Breit on adoption of this report and also share the same sentiment and congratulate the team for such a sterling work. Thanks.
Thank you, Honorable Tappe. Honorable members, with that done, brings us to the end of our meeting. Are there any minutes, Mamunyamza and Mamukakaza, you'd like us to adopt?
Not today, Chair.
Not today. Okay. We'll keep our minutes for other dates. Honorable members, that concludes our meeting and the grilling week we have had. Please go and have a restful weekend. Enjoy it with your families and continue to be the eyes and ears of your constituency and your communities. Look out for the issues that continue to be the subject matter of our committee so that when we do meet, you can be able to talk directly to the issues that are affecting people in our communities and in our constituencies. I therefore wish you a restful weekend and may you stay safe and protected during these challenging times when we are seeing the COVID-related numbers beginning to soar up again. Do ensure that you adhere to the COVID regulations and you stay safe at all times. The meeting stands adjourned.
Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Chair.
Blessed weekend to everybody.
Goodbye.
Goodbye, colleagues.
And my
people.
We have a mover for the adoption of the submission by Mr.
Members.
Remarkable guy.
Bare modula tuko ipuluke, gare o dula dikokotla. Nagi dule tse thuko.
He we dule tse thuko mogaja ke go bona le go kwa go chambeng man. I was in the chamber this week.
Ke tsere kona.
Nya mogae jo nya. He.
Gare o dula dikokotla monna.
E mogae jo ere o ja Keresemose monate man le new year monate ga ke sekitla ko go bona mo selemong seno seno.
No man, a re bonane ka moso man, ke re ore ka parliamente e bulwa re kopana physically. Ey.
Yeah man, you owe me coffee.
COVID ena increase everywhere no, eh?
Yeah, increase everywhere. Like ya see ya gompieno yana ke boela ga ke boela first that.
No,
I'm not going to try to really go for one.
We talk a mail and when I go for Palama Yahai.
Yahai, when I got Yahai, go keep to look or put the same at Hata Sail and that the Matipa. He talk a mail and say that the Matipa.
Everybody,
all right,
on the sidelines.
All right.